It's time to drop the puck. Time for the Nightcap. Your home for news and insider info on your Vegas Golden Knights and the NHL. Let's hear from the goalie. Here's Lindsey Brown.
Hey, how are you? And welcome back to another installment of the Nightcap. We appreciate you choosing to join us to talk some Golden Knights hockey tonight via the CBS Sports Radio 1140 app or on, well, the radio.com app. I always do this and I always forget to change my little script here.
It's hard. I get it. It's tough to remember these things.
It is tough. You're hearing Ben Goetz of the Las Vegas Review Journal. He is joining me tonight for the Nightcap program. No Ryan Quigley for us this week. But before we get really deep diving on these Golden Knights, because it is going to be a deep dive on the Nightcap tonight.
Real deep.
Where can we find your work, Ben? Where can we follow you? Where can we get all your good stuff?
Oh, thank you. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben S. Goetz, G-O-T-Z. That is what I am on the old Twitter machine. And of course, all my stuff's at reviewjournal.com.
Yes.
Boom.
Good stuff. You did not have to go to the East Coast. You're not in Buffalo.
No, thankfully. Oh, my poor guy, Dave Shane. Shout out to Dave, Nevada Sports Writer of the Year. Give him that props. His big reward for winning an award was to be alone in Buffalo on this lovely January night.
Yes. One night in Buffalo. One to remember. Now we've addressed that. Like Shane from Mulan said, let's get down to business. Your Golden Knights are finding themselves in a very, very, very interesting position, Ben, because about a week ago we were sitting, well, we didn't have a show last week because we got preempted by college bowl season, which thankfully is coming to an end tonight. But they were fresh off a comeback victory, a 5-4 victory in overtime over the best team in the NHL, really, going the St. Louis Blues.
I mean, it was the most dramatic win in franchise history, literally. They'd never come back from that big a deficit before.
Right, and I believe they were at that deficit of 3-0 after the first period. And
that would become a theme.
We didn't know it. We didn't know it would become a theme because we were so excited about that game, and especially to do it against an opponent like St. Louis, which obviously is the defending Stanley Cup champion, has been basically carried over that success into the regular season this year and just hit the ground running right away. But as you said, it started a little bit of a trend, and that trend has become quite troubling. The Golden Knights last week went 0-3, and their first loss coming against the Pittsburgh Penguins. They lose that game 4-3, and that Pittsburgh game, while it wasn't a terrible loss, because Pittsburgh is a very surprisingly a good team, Ben, considering how many injuries they have sustained thus far this year, but they gave up a 2-0 lead in that first period and really weren't able to claw their way to their victory.
Yeah, it was a weird game for the Knights. They fell behind 3-0. It just took until the second period.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the second period, they outshot Pittsburgh by a ridiculous amount. Now, Coach Jarglin after the game and players after the game said, we don't really care about the shot disparity. Obviously, they were sitting back because they had that 3-0 lead. And Pittsburgh, I mean, as you kind of hinted at, has been decimated by injuries this year.
Unlike any other team in the league right now.
Right. So it was very clear that they were white-knuckling it, you know, both hands on the steering wheel. We're just hanging on for dear life here to try to grind out this road win. At the same time, you have to give the Knights credit for not just kind of, you know, out-shooting them, but really out-shooting them.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the Knights players and kind of the coach after the game, I think, could say with a straight face, we played an okay game. It was 1-of-82. This was not our night. We lost to a talented team. But when those same problems that cropped up in the Pittsburgh game then cropped up against teams that are nowhere near the Penguins in the standings,
yes,
though the Blue Jackets are actually, once again, another surprisingly good team, still not on the level of Pittsburgh, it's a real troubling trend for them, especially because they were at home closing out a season-long 7-game homestand, and now they are on the road for 8 straight games.
Right, and before they even got to that Columbus game, which they lost on Saturday 3-0, the worst game, the most egregious game, the most egregious performance for me of the week, and honestly of the season. I think that this game was worse than that Philadelphia game that they had when they were in Philly very early on. I think they lost like 7-2 or something. It was just an absolute dumpster fire of a game.
The Oscar dance game, I believe,
yes,
was 6-2.
Yes, it was less than ideal. But they end up losing 5-2 to the Los Angeles Kings, who are at the bottom of the Pacific Division. We're riding a 3-game losing streak into the Golden Knights building, and the Knights walk out into the first period for the first 15 minutes, just hanging out, getting some things done, getting some chances. In the last 7 minutes, they find themselves down 4-0.
It was just insane.
Correct. It was correct.
So it was a weird game because, as you mentioned, the avalanche for the Kings really didn't start until the last 7 minutes of the period.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, my takeaway from the game was going to be, oh, wow, the Knights came out here with like a C-plus effort, and it looks like they still might pull it out because I think the Kings were just going to be that bad. And to be fair, the Knights, and this might make for good radio, you and I are going to disagree which was the worst loss of the two.
Really?
Because I do kind of get, you're playing a last place team at home, the Kings. You have just played three straight playoff teams at home.
Mm-hmm.
You're at home for a really long time. I mean, as we mentioned, it's a long homestand.
Yep.
Kind of toward the end of the homestand. Gerard Gallant was not so subtly grumbling about the schedule, and you get it. I'm sure every player's family and friends had circled this homestand on their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
This is when I'm going to go visit Las Vegas in January. So you can assume with this kind of long homestand, players were distracted. And so the Kings game did feel like a trap game to me. That said, when the Kings, with 4 seconds left in the first period, are diving for loose pucks in your crease,
mm-hmm.
and you are not, that
Correct.
Is a problem.
Correct.
So they, of course, go behind 4-0. Like I said, the fourth goal I thought was absolutely just damning for the Knights.
Yeah.
Allowed. They kind of rally, make it 4-2, but of course the Kings hang on to win. Like I said, I think the fact that they put up that kind of performance in what in my head was a trap game was bad, but then not bouncing back against Columbus, to me, was worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happens with these losses, and as much as we can deep dive into that Columbus game, most of what we've said about the Pittsburgh game, about the Kings game, and the brief touching that we've done on the Blue Jackets game, it's the same story. And it's that I think the Golden Knights, this past week, weren't really able or willing or really down to put that last little bit extra of effort that the Kings were doing. Like you said, diving for pucks in that crease, no matter how much time is left on that clock. Because at the end of the day, you play until the buzzer goes. There's no runoff time in the NHL. And it was just so troubling for me to see a team that prides itself as a Stanley Cup contender, a team that thought that they were taking some steps and did take some steps, but to have a performance like that against a team that really has nothing to play for, and for you to get outworked in that way and to just get outskated in every aspect of the game, and the Knights having very little to any response. I mean, sure, you get goals once in a while, but in terms of shift to shift, like belief when you're watching those games, and even in that Columbus game, I just thought it was dead as hell in the arena, and just there was no momentum, no energy whatsoever. And when your things aren't going your way in terms of wins, in terms of getting off to good starts, those little pieces of momentum that you can gain by making sure that puck stays out of the net in that last second, or blocking shots, or hitting the net consistently, those are the things you need to help get yourself and claw your way back into those games where things aren't coming as easy for you.
Yeah, well, I think what we can agree was very poor about both those losses, that once the Knights gave up the first goal, it was essentially over.
It was like self-fulfilling prophecy.
It was insane. So like I kind of mentioned with the Kings game, I thought the Knights were kind of, you know, hanging with them. It was a sloppy game, not that well played, but it was clearly like, I was like, oh, I don't know if the Kings have enough juice to take it to the Knights, even on a night where the Knights clearly are not giving their A effort here. And then the Kings scored. Not that great of a goal for Malcolm Subban to give up. The guy's almost on the bench, almost out of the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
And every ounce of energy that the Knights were playing with, which wasn't, like I said, their A-level energy level, just seemed to go away.
Right, but they were still working for it, and they could still smell that they were in the game. But then, like you said, it was such a deflating nature of that first goal and then the second goal.
All right, then you give up two, then
right,
you give up three, and of course, by the end of the period, you give up four. And like I said, I thought that fourth goal was just awful to give up.
Right.
And same thing against the Blue Jackets, where you allow that first goal, and it just seemed like all the life drained from the Knights at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially because when you're talking about the Blue Jackets, you're talking about a John Tortorella coach team that I think, because it isn't as talented as some of his other teams, has just really bought into his coaching style, where
right.
they are,
which is gritty,
tough,
which is gritty hockey.
They are mean.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to make you play tough, disciplined hockey to beat them. They're going to make you have to work hard. And the Knights just didn't look interested in doing that that game on Saturday night. They just looked like, once they went down 1-0, they're like, it's going to take a lot for us to score. Like, we're going to have to bang in front of the net. We're going to have to win 50-50 battles in the offensive zone, get pucks. I just don't know if we want to do that. And then, of course, the Blue Jackets decide to go up 2-0, end up going 3-0. So the Knights face a 3-0 deficit for the fourth straight game, which is just honestly impressive. Statistically,
it's
that is impressive.
It's impressingly awful.
Right.
Yes. Considering the talent they have on this roster. And it's not like they don't know how to score. And it's also like they're not trying. But it's when you don't have that confidence, when those little things aren't, you're not getting rewarded for those little hardworking details that you're doing and winning those 50-50 battles and hitting. Because the Knights hit more than anybody in the league. They throw their body weight around more than anybody else in the league. They lead the league in hits. But there's a difference between throwing your weight around in a productive way and throwing your weight around just to bust some bodies and try to get something going. And when you're just going with the latter for the most part, it's going to be really tough for you to stay in position and stay defensively sound for you to not only take care of your defensive end, but get out of that defensive end and break out and have those scoring chances. It just seems like the Golden Knights are getting caught up in these very small aspects of the game that is just bleeding them dry. And because they're not scoring, because that those good feelings aren't there, they're not able to generate momentum and get themselves back into the games as well as they have earlier in the season.
Yeah, they just seem frustrated right now. And I think that Blue Jackets game was a good example of it, where, like I said, I just don't think they had the effort to win 50-50 puck battles, mm-hmm. to keep pucks in the offensive zone. And that just kind of ground on them throughout the entire game, because that's something I thought the Blue Jackets did so well. They cleared pucks from the slot or in front of the net. They didn't allow the Knights rebound chances or anything like that, and they just chipped pucks out of the defensive zone whenever they had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Whenever they had a chance, they said, we're not even going to worry about a clean breakout. We're just worried about you not having another chance to kind of pass the puck around in the O zone. And it just clearly frustrated the Knights so much so that, yeah, I mean, Coach Jar Gallant by the end of the game is saying the crowd's basically sarcastically cheering mm-hmm. Shea Theodore for throwing a hit because we just weren't doing enough.
Right. And as you said, that, and that's a really great pickup about how of Columbus's ability to get that puck out, because I coach that to my kids all the time, is that when things aren't going well, when in doubt, chip it out, just get right. it out, because even if you can get one player off the ice and get a new fresh pair of legs out there, that's going to make a difference. And at the end of the day, you're not allowing teams to have the possession to allow themselves to cycle down low and get into those grooves that where those angles are created for between Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone and Carlson and all the players that we know have such great talent to score and to lead this team to lots of victories and victories that are a lot more decisive and not so crazy. But we're going to get into that a little bit more, but we're going to go a little bit more on the defensive side on the other side of our break. It's time for us to take our first intermission. When Ben and I come back, we're going to take a reading of the old panic meter, because I don't think we've really done that yet this year. So, that's what we're going to do. My name is Lindsay Brown. This is The Nightcap live on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and streaming on the radio.com app.
Your Monday Night Power Play, The Nightcap, on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
And welcome back to The Nightcap. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host always and forever. And as we kick off the second portion of the show, I would like to remind you that it's super, super easy to listen back to this show, any past episode, any future episodes, should we be approved for them. All you got to do is subscribe on Apple Podcasts and literally in the search bar, you search The Nightcap, include the hit that purple subscribe button on The Nightcap feed's homepage, and you can do the same thing on that radio.com app. Just search up The Nightcap, and it will bring you to the feed where you can find all the best, and I won't say worse, because none of our takes are ever bad, Ben.
We are batting 1,000%.
1,000% every week, week in and week out. As I said, Ben Goetz, my fellow Minnesota homelander, is here joining me on The Nightcap tonight. Hello, Ben.
Hey, hey, hey.
And we are going to take a little bit of a reading of the panic meter, because we're now through at least half point of the season. We're now seeing some trends starting to emerge from the Golden Knights, not just in the last week, but from the season as a whole, because as much as we like to think from a week by week basis, that's what it is. Some things pop up from previous games from way back earlier in the season that are starting to show their colors again as well. And with this point of the schedule, we are running out of games to make up for those mistakes. And so just before we start deep diving, I just want to get your initial big read on for your panic meter, Ben, for this team. On a scale of 1 to 10, how worried are you about the Golden Knights?
So I think the best way for me to answer this is to come back to you with a question. Am I worried about them, one, making the playoffs, or am I worried about kind of what their goal was before the year, contending for a Stanley Cup? Because to me, those are two very different questions, and I have two very different
Fine.
Answers for
them. I will take that, and I will upgrade it to, What do we play for? We play for cups. That was the expectation. Let's put that context there.
Yeah, so with that context, I think the worry has to be high, like a 6 or a 7 right now, at least with how this team is playing right now. Now, that could obviously change because we got the February 25th trade deadline coming up. They can make additions to this roster.
Yes, they can.
But while this team certainly, I think, you know, no one should be panicking about whether they're going to make the playoffs or not, even though they are kind of slipping. They're in the first wild card position as we enter today. The Winnipeg Jets are just 2 points behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Jets are currently out of the playoffs. The Jets have 2 games in hand, though you can also play that the opposite way and say the Knights are technically only 1 point out of first place in the Pacific. The Pacific is kind of a jumbled mess right now. So do I think the Knights have more talent than a lot of the teams are kind of jumbled up with right now and can rise above them? Absolutely. Do I think that that's going to ultimately be a big feather in their cap when you have to play the Colorados and the St. Louises of the Western Conference just to get to the Stanley Cup final? Yeah, I think that's going to become an issue for this team,
mm-hmm.
especially because they just haven't shown, I mean, let alone for 7 games, basically any kind of reliable 7-game stretch this season.
Yeah.
They have not put together a complete kind of 7-game stretch, at least I think, of consistent hockey. And so to all of a sudden expect them to do that in April...
Mm-hmm.
Seems foolish at this point. Now, they could certainly, like I said, prove me wrong, and they could certainly make additions to this roster that would change my opinion. I mean, I think everyone's opinions about the Knights completely changed once they got Mark Stone last mm-hmm. trade deadline. That team was kind of plodding along, didn't seem like it had a clear direction of where it was going. They added Mark Stone, was like, all right, now we're loaded up, let's go. And they, I think, still feel like they were poised for a run there,
mm-hmm.
if not for a certain decision in a Game 7 against the Sharks. But like I said, overall, I think, you know, you've got to raise some concerns about what this team is going to be like once they get into the postseason, because as I said, they're fourth in the Pacific Division right now in just overall points. They're fifth in points percentage, and this is coming off your biggest homestand of the season, and now you've got a huge, huge road trip before the All-Star break, another huge road trip after the All-Star break, and even when you come home, you're hosting teams like Tampa Bay, Washington, I believe Carolina.
Yeah, and since they're playing so well at home, too.
Right. So mm-hmm. this is a really, really key stretch of the schedule that they have to survive to kind of put their hopes of still contending for the Pacific Division title alive. And I think that would be so massive for this team to get another division title and to get kind of home ice advantage through at least the first 2 rounds of the playoffs. Now, we'll mm-hmm. see if they can get there. Like I said, I have my concerns that they will be able to do that.
So let me rewind just a little bit, because I wasn't here last year. Before Mark Stone was here, you said they were kind of plotting. They didn't really have an identity. They weren't really sure. Do you see similar types of just, does it feel about the same it did last year, where you feel like a move is really what this team needs to do? Or do you feel like this team has a direction or a lack thereof at all?
Yeah, I feel like this team has, you know, kind of created an identity. You know, they're more physical. They've, of course, changed what they're doing in the defensive zone. But they just don't execute kind of on a game-to-game basis. Like I said, that's kind of the confounding thing to me about this previous homestand. Like I said, like I even understand the kind of trap game nature of that Kings game. But then to not have kind of enough pride to say, okay, we got embarrassed in front of our home crowd.
And got lit up by your coach in the presser, in
absolutely.
The post-game presser, which has not happened this year and does not happen very often when Coach Gerard Gallant is your head coach.
Right, and then you come out with another disappointing effort.
Mm-hmm.
2 nights later against the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's, like I said, highly concerning to me. And, you know, I talked to defenseman Nate Schmidt about this the other day, and I kind of asked him what he saw from the Columbus Blue Jackets, and he said, like, there's stuff we can learn from the Blue Jackets and Pittsburgh Penguins
100%.
In terms of those two are two teams that have had talent issues all year. The Penguins because of injuries, the Blue Jackets because of a free agent exodus this last offseason.
Yes.
But they bring it every night.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really ever see a lack of effort with those two teams being the reason why they're losing games. And so when Nate Schmidt kind of unprompted says, hey, you notice that and you kind of have to take notice of that, that's kind of, you know, raises my antenna of like, do the Knights have that right now in
right.
their locker room?
Do they have that grittiness? Do they have that want or need that where I'm shutting this defensive zone down, or I'm bearing down and making sure I'm getting this goal in any way, shape, or form I can? And you're absolutely right. And that's where some of what you're saying it makes total sense to me in terms of the consistency, in terms of what this team looks like on paper. And that's why I wanted to ask you about how this team was feeling in relativity to last year before they got Mark Stone. Because I got news for you people. There is no Mark Stone coming to this roster, and there's also no room for him on this roster because those players don't come around very often. And usually players like that, the only reason why Mark Stone is here is because of his connection with now GM Kelly McCrimmon and how far they go back. So that entire thing would have been a lot more painful for most franchises to acquire a player like that. So that's what, for me, and you put your panic meter at a 6 or a 7, I'm there as well, if not a 7 or 8. And it's not because I don't believe that this roster is capable or that these players have the talent that what it needs to compete and to actually contend for a Stanley Cup this season. It's the execution. It's the consistency. It's having all the guys in the room on the same page in terms of what they need to do in the game to be successful. Because sometimes when things aren't going well, it's very easy as a player to kind of go inside your own head and try to be like, well, a team's not doing well, so I need to do everything in my power to make sure that we're doing. And sometimes that's great. But sometimes that means you're getting a little bit too excited with your passes. Sometimes that means I'm taking the puck up and wheeling that breakout and trying to take it up 1-on-0 or 1-against-the-world and not keeping an eye out for your teammates. And while those things might not always equate to goals in the back of your own net every single shift, that mindset, that culture, that feeling around the team, that kind of starts to spoil things and starts to really take things into a direction that weren't intended in any way, shape, or form. And I think that's what's happened in the defensive zone for the Golden Knights, because the last few games, and granted, this team isn't built to be a defensive stalwart by any means. I think that's one thing that I have to check myself on a lot, being like, wow, they're defensively, they're really struggling. But then I have to remind myself, who do they have for personnel? What are they trying to do? They're trying to make sure they can spring their forwards and get in those odd man north-south rushes that we all love to watch, especially when they're playing at home. But when you're not, you're letting in more goals than you usually would, when it's a little bit leakier than it usually is, when it already is leaky and you don't have enough buckets, things can start to get really gnarly really quickly. And that's what I'm worried about for the Golden Knights, because right now the basis of whatever identity, at least the identity that I thought that they had when I arrived here at the beginning of this season, started from the net out, started from your goaltending position out. And as I said about the other players, it's not that I don't think Marc-Andre Fleury is capable. It's not that I don't think Malcolm Subban is capable. What they're doing right now, or whatever they're not doing right now, isn't translating to the performances that they need from their goaltenders and they need from their defensive zone. Would you disagree with that, or would you agree with
that? No, I would totally not disagree with that. And like I said, this is kind of a fundamental difference from what we were talking about last season, to kind of get it back to your original question. Mm-hmm. I mean, last season at the trade deadline, if people remember, the Knights were in a distant third place in the Pacific Division. They were well behind the Calgary Flames and the San Jose Sharks, so they were just kind of fizzling. They were kind of in no man's land.
Treading water.
Right, because they weren't chasing the mm-hmm. Sharks or the Flames, because they are kind of out of reach, and the Coyotes were behind them, and for the most part, the Coyotes weren't going to catch them. So they're just kind of in no man's land with not a lot of external motivation in terms of, okay, we got to chase this team, or hey, this team is right on our heels, we got to go on a run.
Right.
And then Mark Stone arrived, and I think that was a clear message from the front office that, no, we believe in you.
Right.
And that gave them a lot of confidence. They saw how good Mark Stone was. That gave them a lot of confidence. And they ended up going on a really, really good run. They were on a 100-plus point pace from the trade deadline on once they got Mark Stone. I mean, the carrot is there for this team.
Mm-hmm.
The Pacific Division is absolutely there up for grabs. Like I said, they are currently 1 point behind the Calgary Flames as we're talking right now for it.
But everybody is. Everybody's in contention for it, which wasn't the case last year. As you said, there was cushion between the top two teams and then the teams that were trailing them. That doesn't exist this year. You're very much they're right in the middle of it. They found themselves at the top of the division last week. They're in the wild card. They're just 3 or 4 points from on the outside looking in. So that's why I get nervous, because if you go on a streak, if you go in through like a 3-week slide where you go like 2-8 or something like that, that is a big enough hole in this division this year for you to not just talk about making a run in the cup. If you keep playing like this, and if things start to devolve enough and fingers start being pointed and certain mindsets are changed or confidences are breached too deeply, you could miss the playoffs just as easily as you could make a run at the Stanley Cup final in ways, right?
Yeah, like I said, I personally don't have enough confidence in that these other Pacific Division teams mm-hmm. are going to go on a run to really put the Knights in serious danger. My panic meter for are the Knights going to make the playoffs is much, much lower than my one for are they a Stanley Cup contender. But at a certain point, you have to think that this team just needs kind of like what they got last year with Mark Stone, and as you point, what they're not going to get this year, at least to the same level, they need some sort of confidence boost. They need someone to just shake them by the collars and to remind them that they are a talented team and that they can't keep putting on performances like this if they want people to take them as seriously as they took them in the offseason. Certainly, I took them in the offseason. I thought they were, you know, at the time, one of the top two teams in the Pacific Division, along with the San Jose Sharks. Looks great by me. But for sure, one of the best, you know, four or five teams in the Western Conference, and mm-hmm. they certainly just do not look like that right now.
No, and at some point, you have to rely on yourself. You have to find it within yourself to generate your own confidence, your own momentum. It can't always be, well, we lost on a bad penalty. Well, we had a really good trade. Well, so something happened, and that's when everything turned around. Sooner or later, as professionals, as athletes, especially with the athletes that they have on this roster, someone has to have the ability to say, guess what? I'm putting it all on my back. And it can't be Mark Stone all the time, because Mark Stone isn't the superstar goal scorer that everybody thinks that he was brought here to do.
He's a different kind of player. And he's still
a different superstar.
He's still an incredible player, uh-huh. but not in the way that I think a lot of people want him to be.
He's a complete superstar. He's not going to be Alexander Ovechkin hanging out at the top of the circles just banging away at one-timers. The reason why Alexander Ovechkin has all those goals is because until about 2 years ago, that guy didn't even see the defensive zone. He never back-checked. He was just French fry legs through the neutral zone just waiting for his next pass to go shoot and score. If you want a goal scorer, if you want a superstar like that, then you're going to be giving up all the defensive and all the little things that Mark Stone does so well. But like I said, I'm starting to just get really concerned, because I think there's something going on with the goaltenders. I think that they're both dealing with something that's separate and they're not really in a rhythm. I have every confidence that they're going to get it back. Every confidence. If there's anybody that can do it, it's Marc-Andre Fleury. I just don't know if it's going to be in the amount of time that they need it to be, where they don't put themselves into a position where, even if they do make the playoffs, maybe they've used up all of their gas and all of their reserves of energy to make sure that they make the playoffs, and then end up leaving the Stanley Cup playoffs early, which would be very unfortunate, because this roster deserves to be showcased and deserves to have the ability to really showcase all the talent they have on this. All right, so it's time for us to take our second breather of the night. When we come back after our second intermission, it's time for extra special weekly segment of Dump and Chase. It always falls during the 35th minute, or at least we try. That's Ben Goetz. My name is Lindsay Brown, and this is The Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and streaming on the radio.com app.
For a little Dump and Chase, The Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
And welcome back to The Nightcap. It is time for our weekly Dump and Chase segment. But for once, I think for the first time ever, we actually landed within the 35th minute. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host always and forever on The Nightcap, which is here each and every Monday night, 6 to 7 p.m. on CBS Sports Radio 1140 on the radio.com app. And tonight I am joined by Las Vegas Review Journal, I would say, like, ink stain wretch, but it's not really ink stain anymore. It would be more like water bottle stained Ben Goetz.
I'll take it.
You'll take it.
I'll take it.
There's not a lot of ink going on in your business anymore. It's all on the line. Correct?
It's on the line, but we still put out a daily paper. You know, if people want to see my lovely work in print, they can do so.
Mm-hmm. Where can you do that?
Well, wherever you get newspapers, but also at reviewjournal.com.
Right on.
And you can follow me on the Twitter machine at Ben S. Goetz, GOTZ.
I do like reading newspapers better than reading stuff online. I will say that.
That's
I'm an
good.
Old
it's just
soul.
All in front of you. You get big pictures. It's nice.
It's a healthy thing. That's very unique from where we are from. Minnesota's a very healthy paper, newspaper reading populace.
Still got two newspapers in town.
I know. It's crazy.
Well, so do we.
Well, yeah, this is true. All right, for our Dump and Chase segment, this is where we bring little random thoughts, stories, observations, lines of consciousness that we have over the course of the week that relate to hockey, the Golden Knights, or just whatever. And there's plenty to go around this week, because there's a lot of news and a lot of shuffling and a lot of weird stuff. Ben, why don't we kick things off with your contribution for Dump and Chase?
Yeah, so I want to talk about some more fun news that the New Jersey Devils made for not good reasons, as they have for much of this year. They fired general manager Ray Shiro on Sunday, who, of course, tried to basically go all in with his roster this year. He's been there 5 years. They've only made the playoffs once before this year, and it just completely blew up on his face. He fired his head coach, John Hines, who has already landed on his feet with the Nashville Predators, because hockey is weird.
Yeah,
and
it's weird.
John Hines is the old college roommate of the Predators' assistant general manager. So, yeah.
Nepotism, you say.
Who needs to interview people? Just hire your bud. Anyway, they fired him. Ray Shiro then traded Taylor Hall for, I think, a semi-decent return to the Arizona Coyotes. And, of course, he's going to face some more trade deadline decisions coming up here, except that the New Jersey Devils said, no, no, no. You're good.
You're good 5 years in, buddy. Ray, we'll see you later.
Yep, so they promoted Tom Fitzgerald, who's been like a hot GM name kind of the last couple of years, was a finalist for the Minnesota Wild job 2 years ago.
And he will be helped by none other, the man, the myth, the 1A of my favorite goalies of all time, Martin Brodeur.
I know, which is an interesting move. But, you know, we've said this like five times this year, but what are the Devils doing?
I don't know what
How
they're
is
doing.
This guy good enough, in your mind, to trade Taylor Hall, but then not smart or good enough to trade Wayne Simmonds? Right, like I said, I thought he actually did okay on the Taylor Hall trade. They got back a lot of future assets, a couple prospects, some high draft picks. They're going to retool, you would think, around number one overall pick this year, Jack Hughes, number one overall pick from 2017, I believe, Nico Hischier. You got your 1-2 center center tandem. Ugh, I can't talk today.
It's okay.
Of the future. And so the roster, at least future-wise, has a foundation.
Yes, it's growing.
Right, you need to pick off some veteran pieces. Like I said, they signed Wayne Simmonds to a 1-year deal this offseason.
It's like totally,
totally didn't work.
No.
They needed to potentially trade their captain, who's a defenseman, Green, at the deadline this season. But those are ancillary pieces compared to, you know, the decision of whether or not you're going to be able to sign Taylor Hall long-term or trade him. And like I said, Ray Shiro was apparently good enough to do one but not the other. And so the order of that is very confusing to me. It's not necessarily wrong that he got fired because, as I said, they've made the playoffs once in five seasons under him, and that was the year where Taylor Hall just literally put the team on his back and won MVP.
Yeah.
Their goaltending has been a mess for three seasons.
Real bad.
And if you look at them this year, I mean, the Detroit Red Wings are the only thing stopping the Devils from basically being a total just laughing stock this year.
Yeah.
I checked on Saturday, and they were 30th in goals scored, 30th in goals allowed, you know.
Whoopsie-daisy.
Only better than those lovely Detroit Red Wings I just mentioned. So they're a mess of a team. They've been better since Taylor Hall left, because I think that was just kind of a pall over the franchise.
Yeah.
But still not great. And I just don't understand what this franchise thinks it's doing.
Yeah, it's just confusing to me because when you fire John Hines, that alone should just tell you, yeah, the season is a wash. Like, if you have to fire your coach or push to that point, that's how bad your team is playing, you're probably not going to be able to claw back into the playoffs. So just to have it already be classified as a lost season and then trade your star in Taylor Hall and then fire him, it's just like, did you think things were going to change? Were you expecting different results? Were you expecting all of a sudden this was going to be the Washington Capitals on this ice? Like, this is a lost season. Why fire him now? But I agree with you. It's a weird
timing's bit. Just weird. Like,
it's very weird.
In January, I guess you give Tom Fitzgerald an extended audition, see how he does at the trade deadline. But that also feels like a weird time to, you know, base your decision on who your next full-time GM is and whether Tom Fitzgerald gets an extra third-round pick for Wayne Simmonds at the deadline.
Yeah.
Who's to say?
You're already, there's really nowhere to go but up. So maybe the extended audition, and you're just like, let's just keep developing the pieces that we have and just erase the rest of this from our memory, which I'm sure Ray Shiro would like to do as well. Because, like you said, limited success, one playoff appearance.
Good in Pittsburgh, though.
Yeah, good in Pittsburgh. It tends to be when you draft Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Marc-Andre Fleury all within 4 years of each other. But who says anything else but that? All right, my dump and chase submission today is going to be about the renewed and very welcomed renewed rivalry for Alberta, the battle for Alberta. And if you're not really familiar with that, because Vegas, it's a newish hockey town, it's totally understandable. The Oilers and the Flames both are located in Alberta. They're also both Pacific Division opponents who we see quite often. And, you know, the Canadians, they take their hockey a little bit different than we do here down in the States.
Yeah, slightly.
And when you get those types of rivalries, much like Sharks, Golden Knights, that's what the Oilers and Flames used to be. But because both of those franchises, and mostly the Oilers, have been a dumpster fire for the better part of 20 years, the rivalry hasn't really been there. But this week, a couple nights ago, it seems to be that there is bad blood brewing, because Matthew Tkachuk, who is one of my favorite players in the NHL, because he's just an a-hole. Literally, there's lack of a better term. Like, he's one of those players who's like, I'm just going to go hit you and make sure that I'm disrupting your game. And he can play. He can score. But he teed up Zach Cassian, who's a defender for the Oilers, a couple times. Big time hits. And if you haven't seen him, go YouTube him. But Cassian was not pleased because, while the hits are pretty crazy, they're big time hits and they're fun to watch, they're a little questionable of why Tkachuk would hit him. It didn't really seem like he was making that big of a hockey play, although one of them definitely was. But he took offense to that, and he like literally ragdolled Matthew Tkachuk all over the ice after a whistle was blown. But Cassian found himself in the box as the instigator and now finds himself suspended for 2 games just for all the crap that went on between Matthew Tkachuk. And Matthew Tkachuk, who has an assistant captain label on his shoulder and a very good young player, this is exactly what he is meant to do. This is exactly what he's meant to do. And there's post-game comments between both of them. There are some words that were used that I cannot repeat on the radio. But nonetheless, I am here for this renewed rivalry. There was even Leon Draisaitl quoted earlier today when they were talking about the All-Star game because he and Connor McDavid are going there and representing the Islanders. Gallant's coaching them.
Yeah, I was about to bring this up. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, 3v3. They asked him if they put Draisaitl himself, McDavid, and Tkachuk on a line, how he would respond. He said he would get off the ice.
Yeah, good luck, Gerard. Yeah, have fun coaching this collection.
Yes. That is how bad this has heated up in the better part of a week and a half. And granted, this has been going all season, and Matthew Tkachuk, I think, is in his 3rd season or 4th season with the Flames and has made quite a name for himself and a name that was already very recognizable in the league. His dad was obviously a huge, huge superstar in the league back in the day and one that threw his weight around just as much, if not more. So I'm kind of excited that these Pacific rivalries are kind of taking over the game of hockey between the Kings and the Flames, between Drew Doughty and Matthew Tkachuk. Now you have Zach Cassian against Matthew Tkachuk.
Not a popular guy, it turns out.
He's the Western Conference version of Brad Marchand, essentially.
Yeah, it's too bad Drew Doughty didn't get voted into the All-Star game, because that was awesome.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
And you'd have, Doughty would be one of only 2 defensemen on the roster. Giordano is the only defenseman Gerard Gallant has to play in the 3-on-3
tournament. Thank God he's there to play some sort of...
Giordano's never leaving the ice.
No, honestly. But I think this is fun. I like it when teams just get a little bit dirty. Now, I hope everybody stays safe and everybody stays legal, but that's up to them. That's personal responsibility. But I like a little nastiness with my hockey. I do.
You feel the tension? Also, can we in the talk air about, right now?
Yes.
Can we talk about how good Connor McDavid is? Because in that game, there's a turnover on the in Connor McDavid, his defensive zone right by the blue line. He chips into it himself, skates past one defenseman, skates past another, makes a forehand, backhand move so fast, I needed to watch the replay to determine whether he shot it on his forehand or his backhand. It was his forehand. How he got his stick in so tight where he could make that tight a move right in front of the goaltender, I have no idea. But it was incredible, and he is a just ridiculously fun human being to watch.
I can't get over Connor McDavid, that he exists. And maybe I'm biased because I've never been the biggest Sidney Crosby fan in terms of the way that he plays. Like, it's just... I have a tough time loving people who have everything, or loving teams or players where they're like, we have all these players and we're really good because we're from Minnesota and everything good is always taken away from us.
I mean, Crosby's best thing is his backhand. He's the most fundamentally sound player at all.
Right. But I don't
McDavid's
remember the hype.
Just fun.
I don't remember the hype around Crosby being like it is around McDavid, in just terms of night in, night out. Maybe it's social media and that's playing into it, but it just seems every single week, McDavid, you're just like, what is this?
I say he follows up that crazy goal against the Maple Leafs with this one against, like,
what
I said, the Flames.
This?
That I just don't know who else can make that play.
And it's just, can someone who knows what they're doing please go work in Edmonton so that he is not wasted? Because it's just, I hate it when that happens. I said this when he was when they won the draft lottery to draft him, and it was rigged 100%. We cannot let Connor McDavid's talents be wasted on the Edmonton Oilers. And I'm not saying they need to move him. But we need to see this guy in the playoffs. We need to see this guy compete for championships and see what that next level is. Because there are more levels to Connor McDavid. You don't always find him in the regular season.
No, and he's got Leon Draisaitl too. That's the thing. They got him like the best
go
running mate
get a
in the NHL.
For God's sakes, maybe a goaltender too. That would help, perhaps.
Yeah, Mike Smith still, strapping on those pads at 40 years of age. So.
Goaltending, not a strong suit for the Pacific Division right now.
Not great.
Definitely not. Not great.
Enjoy your time in the All-Star game, Jacob Markstrom.
Yes.
You said not it last.
Who got lit up last week. He pulled after 6 or 7 goals and they gave up 9 to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is apparently world beating again. They won, 9 in a row?
They won 10 in a row, but guess who defeated them?
Who?
The New Jersey Devils I just trashed.
Like we all predicted, Ben.
The NHL is such a great league.
And that's why Ray Charles was fired. Be like, how dare you?
You can't beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. We're tanking.
Yes. It is time, that time of the year, for the worst of the worst to really start thinking about it. But the Detroit Red Wings, dear Lord. I was trying to look and try to make a case for the Golden Knights to maybe go after Jimmy Howard. There was no case to be made, other than he has some playoff pedigree. Otherwise, he has a great number, but he's not playing well.
It's remember when Detroit made all those playoff runs in a row?
16 years in a row.
Yeah, rough times for that city.
R.I.P. I feel bad, but not really. They had a lot of success. All right, it's time for our final intermission. We're going to go retape our sticks before we send you off into the darkness. We'll take a look ahead of the Golden Knights slate of games this week. My name is Lindsay Brown. This is the Nightcap live on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and streaming on the radio.com app.
Sending you off to the naughty chair. It's the Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
And welcome back to the final portion of this week's edition of the Nightcap. Remember, if you've missed anything, you can go back either on the radio.com app via the rewind feature. You just go to the station and you search, you know, CBS Sports Radio 1140 and you search. You can go back to the whole 24 hours. You can listen to the Nightcap. You can listen to the Playmakers, or you can listen to the podcast on the radio.com app or on those Apple podcasts. Just search out the, include the Nightcap, and you should be able to find and subscribe, please, to everything to your heart's desire. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host, always and forever, and I am joined by Ben Goetz, the Las Vegas Review Journal. Hello, Ben.
Hey, hey, hey.
Thank you so much for taking some time on your day off to join me and hang out and talk some hockey.
Thank you. You guys are, I love talking hockey.
Yes.
I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, we do it every day. It's almost, if we take a day off, we're like, what am I supposed to do with all of this time?
It's weird.
It is weird. And we have a little bit of time left here on this week's Nightcap. So we're going to take a little bit of a look ahead on the Golden Knights schedule for the upcoming week. Tomorrow night, they are going to be facing off against the Buffalo Sabres. Sabres are sabering, a.k.a. playing well for better parts of the front half of the season and then just dumpster firing the way the rest of the way out. They sit at 2019 and 747 points, fifth in the Athletic, the Atlantic, and 4-6-0 in their last 10. Ben, how necessary is a win over the Buffalo Sabres tomorrow night? Because for me, it's about an 8.
I think it would just get them, feeling good against the fighting Jack Eichels.
That's it. That's all they have.
Yeah, and literally. Jack Eichel is phenomenal. He's so fun to watch. I watched him in college when he was still in college.
And
he's still so great. Also, the Colin Miller revenge game, I should point out. Ex-Golden Knights defenseman who got traded to Buffalo for a pair of picks. He's had a really up-and-down season. He was benched for a while. He was paired with Rasmus Dahlin, who was the number one overall pick last year for a while.
So he's sabering.
Yeah,
at an individual level.
It's a lot of highs and lows for Colin Miller, but, you know, it should be interesting to watch him play. Also, I'm so excited to watch my man Ralph Krueger. Dude was in the English Premier League. No, that's not the name for, like, a hockey league they have over there. He was straight up in the, of course, soccer or football, if you'd like to call it, English Premier League last year as the chairman of Southampton for like 4 years. And now they're just like, hey, Ralph, want to do hockey again? He was like, sure, why not?
He has a vision.
It's amazing.
Transcends all sports. He just has a vision. He's working for it. But yeah, I think as long as you're able to shut down Jack Eichel, which is literally all that they have, and, you know, keep the puck out of your own net, which should come if you're able to shut down Jack Eichel, then Golden Knights should have no problem wrapping up a victory tomorrow night at Buffalo. But it is a road game. It is going across three time zones. And, you know, it's not like we're rolling. So on Thursday, they are going to face off against the Ottawa Senators. And you brought this to light to me, Ben, because I didn't realize that Mark Stone will be making his first return to Ottawa since being traded to the Golden Knights last season around the trade deadline. The Ottawa Senators, since trading Mark Stone and every other player that's ever been worth anything in their organization, sometimes we forget. About 4 years ago, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals and almost beat the Pittsburgh Penguins.
So they went to overtime.
They went to overtime.
In a game 7 and, to see who was going to go to the Stanley Cup Final.
Penguins obviously went on to win the Cup and then win the Cup the year after, so things could have been very different.
Mark Stone scored in that game 7, by the way.
Mark Stone, you know, he's teammates with Erik Karlsson and a bunch of other names that are all over the place that have come into success since being traded. They're kind of like the Minnesota just sports scene. We develop them and we send them off to be successful other places. Ottawa's 16-22 and 739 points, 7th in the Atlantic, and 14 points out of a wild card spot.
Just a bit outside.
Just a bit outside. And pretty much between this game, all these games this week should be dubs, straight up. But especially this one with Ottawa, I think that the team should definitely be behind Mark Stone. It's going to be an emotional game for him. It's going to be an emotional game just in general, especially if they're not able to secure a win against Buffalo. But yeah, Ottawa They beat the Golden Knights earlier this season, unfortunately, when they were here on the 17th of October. They lost 3-2 in a shootout. The Golden Knights did.
Mm-hmm. But it's going to be an emotional game for Mark Stone, as you mentioned. I mean, there's guys like Brady Tkachuk, who's one of the Senators, you know, kind of few.
He's mean, too.
Right. Yeah. One of their few kind of nice young pieces. He lived with Mark Stone and his girlfriend for a while in his rookie year. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of emotions, a lot of guys that he's going to see, a lot of places I'm sure he'll visit. I'm sure his family might come to that game, too. Stone's from the Winnipeg area. So just a lot going on. And, you know, like I said, I would expect the Golden Knights would rally around their assistant captain and try to get, you know, a win for him there.
Right. Especially since it's not like the opponent's anything to sniff at, really. And then the Golden Knights will wrap up their games for this week at Montreal on Saturday, who Montreal was kind of looking like they were getting something going on earlier in the season, but have since really fallen off. I think they lost six in a row or something like that over the last couple weeks. They are 19-20 and 745.6 in the Atlantic, 8 points out of a wild card position. They beat the Golden Knights here in overtime, 5-4 on Halloween.
Yeah, but they've just really fallen flat on their face since then. They were close to a wild card berth last year, just came up a couple points short. This year, you know, I think most people expected them to be right in that position again where they're fighting for those last kind of couple playoff spots, and they have just gone completely in the tank right now. And so now there, of course, talks that, you know, I saw like Pierre LeBrun at the Athletic is talking about, do they just blow it up basically and trade guys like another former Knight, Tomas Tatar, who's their leading scorer? Do they send him off? All that stuff's kind of in play right now. We'll see how the Knights do.
Yeah, Carey Price's contract is really hurting them. Big time numbers for those goaltenders that aren't performing as well. But hopefully they can get things back on track for your Golden Knights, because they definitely need to. As I said, they should have no problem securing points this week, but hopefully we will see that come to fruition. Thanks, Ben, for joining me. Thanks to Mark for pushing all the right buttons. We'll be back next Monday, 6 to 7, right here on CBS Sports Radio 1140. Don't forget to podcast us on that radio.com app or on Apple Podcasts. Cheers to you, cheers to me, cheers to us, and all will be. My name is Lindsay Brown, and this has been The Nightcap.